Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Speak your mind. 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
All right, 303. I was not expecting such a heated debate on Aaron Judge as he's, you know, the best player on the planet right now. It's not even close what he's doing. Again, last night, two hits, two-run double. He's already upped his average to about 290. The guy was terrible in April to the point we were quite like, I almost said we, not me. And I'm not one to do that, but I just have to admit, I have to just tell you, I never questioned him. But to the point where a lot of the Yankee fans were worried, and I understood the injury worry more than anything. I never thought that he just lost it, but you know, coming off the toe injury, coming off the core injury, to have an April like that, which we've never seen him struggle the way he struggled. I mean, to watch him now, I mean, you can't get him out. But, I mean, I don't know how you could think anybody's better than him right now. He's Barry Bonds. No joke, he's Barry Bonds. I mean, I don't think he'll hit 70. I don't think it's to that level where any time he gets a strike, he hits a ball. But right now, you can't get him out. And, you know, walking him with the bases loaded doesn't seem crazy. That's how incredible he's been. He plays center field. Like, I don't know what you guys want. Rocco in Saratoga, my man Rocco. What's up, Rocco?
How you doing, C-Mac?
Good, how are you doing, buddy?
Oh, yeah, I'm doing well. I was down in the city this weekend for class reunion, our 50th, All Hallows 50th. Had mass at St. Paddy's on Saturday and went with the 2024 graduating class.
Nice.
Great group of young men. Yes. Oh, took in Hell's Kitchen, Alicia Keys, New York. I love that song at the end. Maybe when Frank's song, hey, we could intersperse a little Alicia Keys.
That's so funny. And I saw that. Someone else was talking about that. I can't remember who. I don't know if it was Barstool or somebody else. Somebody else talked about changing. Somebody I saw on social media or on Twitter was talking about changing Frank to Alicia Keys and Jay-Z, but I wouldn't.
In New York. Yeah, I love Frank, so I can't. Yeah. It's classic. We're used to that at the end of the game. Maybe we should start the games off with Alicia's Empire.
Sure.
New York, right?
Sure.
And start
it's a great idea.
Off with that and end it with Frank, right? Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Hey, that guy, Ralph must have fallen out of a damn coconut tree or something, you know? I didn't know they had coconut trees in New Haven.
Yeah, I mean, they have. Yeah. I know they have pizzerias. That's about all I know.
Yeah.
And they're the home of the, you know, New Haven, Southern Connecticut Fighting Owls. I'm aware of that, too. But that's about it.
Yeah, that's about it. And the coconut tree in Ralph's backyard. That's about it.
Well, I mean, listen, for some, it's not even just his take, necessarily. It's his anger and his feeling like Bryce Harper's being disrespected. Who disrespected Bryce Harper?
Yeah, so he's a Phillies fan. Great. Yeah, the Phillies are doing great. I'm not I'm not dissing Bryce Harper, but all of a sudden he said, oh, Bryce Harper's way better than... Come on, are you nuts, delirious, or what?
Well, I mean...
60 home runs in the season? When did Bryce Harper hit 60 home runs in the season?
No, and obviously never. The most he's ever hit is... 42 home runs in a season.
He's never
even hit 50. No,
not even close.
And you know, then his home run total thing—it's just ridiculous. Like, there's a chance that Jim Thome will end up hitting more career home runs than Judge. I don't know if he will or not. I mean, he had a ton of... Like, there's a chance that Judge never... There's a chance that Judge never reaches the 500, whatever, home runs, 600. I think he had 600. There's a chance he never hits as many home runs as Jim Thome. What world would you say Jim Thome is a better baseball player than Aaron Judge?
In no world.
So it doesn't make... It's like it's just a flawed argument.
Right. Just because you can't look at the numbers. He's played five more years. Okay. These next 5 years, we'll see who's better, who has the better OPS, who has more home runs, who has more hits, okay? Yeah, let's see. I mean, Bryce Harper's a Hall of Fame player, but to argue that he had a better career than Judge, we don't know. We got at least five more good years out of Judge to come, and the same with Bryce Harper. We'll see.
Yeah.
But no way Bryce Harper's going to be better than Judge. It's phenomenal. Like you said, he had no April. He didn't really have a spring training.
No.
And look what he's doing. Hey, come July and August, what is he going to do? He's going to, you know, stay healthy.
We're going to find out. No, we'll find out, Rocco. And it doesn't, and unfortunately, it won't matter. It won't matter to a lot of fans. Like right now, it's great. And I think most people would tell you they love Judge. They love the captain. They, you know, all the superlatives they'll agree with and throw at him as well. But ultimately... There are a lot of the fan base, because I put this out there. When I put out the Judge's the best player since Mickey Mantle to wear the Yankee uniform, or, again, retweeted the MLB Network, I want to make sure. Don't want to take credit for things that aren't mine. I retweeted the conversation they had at MLB Network and agreed with it. But I got a ton of, sucks in the playoffs, did you forget? You know, I mean, we don't take a second to really acknowledge what we're looking at and enjoy what we have. Because it is about championships. I get it. I talked about it yesterday. I'll talk about it today. The Yankees have to win the World Series. We know that. And if Judge is ever going to be beloved like Jeter, beloved like Mariano, beloved like O'Neill, beloved like all the Bernie, all those guys, Pettit, certainly, Posada, you got to win championships to be beloved in today's day and age. Long gone are the days of Ted Williams, where you could just be one of the great baseball players ever, and you wore their uniform, and that's enough. Even the days of Don Mattingly. Let's be honest, Don Mattingly never did anything. Don Mattingly had a 4 or 5 year stretch where he was the best player in baseball. Then his back went on him. He played in one playoff series. He didn't win it. And yet he's beloved. Those days are gone. With the added playoffs, you know, all we focus on is championships. The Yankees spend so much money. That's all that matters. It's all that matters. They were spending money in the 80s. George Steinbrenner was the owner. George Steinbrenner was signing anyone he could. You know, Deion Sanders, Ricky Henderson. Brought in Dave Winfield. They scored a ton of runs. Couldn't win. And yet somehow, back in the 80s and early 90s, we were still in a place as a society and as a fan base of the sport of baseball where you could be beloved without winning. I don't know if that exists anymore. I don't think those days are gone. Those days are gone where you could just be a great player for your team and be beloved. You have to win. Have to. And it sucks that, you know, so many people will say that. So many people will reply with, yeah, but what has he done in the postseason? What has he done in the postseason? Yes, he struggled. Specifically against the Houston Astros. Specifically against the Astros. But does that mean that his career here is a waste, or that he's not worth the money, or that it's not amazing to watch this guy play every day? Because it is. It absolutely is. And I recognize it. And it's great. The same thing with Panarin. Watching Panarin play every game, this was a great year for him. He was incredible. He shows up small in the postseason. And it's been enough where you have to consider moving, you know, thinking about things. He's not exactly Aaron Judge, and it's not the same kind of sport. But right, can we just appreciate a little bit, even while with the same breath we say you have to win? Just a little bit. I mean, and, you know, and we talk about droughts, right? It's the longest. I was talking to Keith out in the newsroom for a little bit, and he mentioned, oh, you know, they got to make sure it's not 18 years because it would be the longest drought in Yankee history. Like, yeah, that's true. But, you know, and because of the crapshoot of the playoffs, like, let's be honest, all they had to do for a lot of those years, like, oh, they went all these years without missing the play, without, you know, they were in the World Series. All they had to do was finish with the best record in the American League. Joe DiMaggio didn't have to be a great World Series player to make the World Series. You know, he didn't have to be a great playoff. That was it. How'd you do in the World Series? That was it. All you had to do was finish with the best record, and you were in the World Series. And then even in the 70s, win the ALCS. That's it. You win three playoff games, you're in the World Series. Nowadays, you got to get through the wild card round. You got to get through the DS. You got to get through the ALCS. You can't get tripped up. Can't have an injury. Can't have a hot team. Can't run into a hot pitching staff. Can't have the Arizona Diamondbacks suddenly get hot and beat you in a postseason series. Like, can't happen. You know how many times the Dodgers would be just flat out in the World Series over the last handful of years? If they played back in the 50s and 60s and 70s when we harken back to this, the great Yankee team that never missed a World Series, yeah, sure, they never had to play a playoff series. Do we know for a fact they would have always made it through three rounds? Because they kept beating the Dodgers in the World Series? I don't know. Tigers had some damn good teams back then. Couldn't have figured out a way to beat the Yankees once in a playoff series? Would they have as many championships? It's hard. It's harder now than ever. Yes, there's an opportunity, but as the division winner, as the 100-win team, as the great team that has the regular season, it's harder than ever to get to a World Series and win a championship. We don't care, and I'm not asking you to. But just recognize that he's unbelievably great. Like, unbelievably great. Like, we haven't seen it since my father's childhood. That's how great. That's how great. We haven't seen a season like last year since 1956, 2 years ago, excuse me. Judge's 2022, we haven't seen anything like it since the Triple Crown year of 66. 56, excuse me. Like, literally. I know, Don Mattingly had a big year in 85, won the World Series, won the MVP. This is the greatest we've seen in multiple generations. So let's enjoy it a little bit. Phil in Long Island, what's up, Phil?
Hey, how you doing, Chris? First time in a long time. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, buddy. What's going on?
I just want to see where you stack up A-Rod in this conversation, especially his walk year. I understand the asterisks with the steroids and everything.
I don't
but
even care about that.
If you look at that 6-7 year period, especially right before he had free agency, where I think he went for about 54 and 155.
Yep.
Not knocking Judge, but PK Rod, where do you put him at?
Behind Judge.
You put him behind Judge. How about as a player, lifetime? All time.
Listen, he came up at 18 years old. He played 22 years as well. He's had seasons, I mean, that were, you know, unbelievable. But right now he's had the better career, no doubt. I still think, I mean, you have
100%
to go,
agree.
I mean, like, he was a different kind of ball player. You know, in 96, as a 20-year-old, he had 358 and won a batting title. You know, again, you could hit 358 in 1996. It was a different world.
100% different.
It was a different
game,
world. Like you're going to, I mean, 310 might win you a batting title these days. Like that
yeah,
might
I think
be good
the Yankees
enough.
Are like, I think the Yankees are third in the American League right now at 262 as a team. So right. I agree with you 100%.
So let's just take him. If my claim isn't that he's, you know, had a better career or will have a better career or is better than Alex Rodriguez ever was. I'm just talking about in a Yankee uniform. In a Yankee uniform, he won two MVPs. In 2005, his first MVP with the Yankees, he hit 321, had an OPS of 1.031, hit 48 home runs, drove in 130. And then the big year of 2007, hit 314, 54, 156. Now, his RBI numbers blow Alex Rodriguez out of the water, but
yeah.
The offense,
Judge is gonna get him on base percentage almost every year if you look at it.
No doubt. And OPS probably and the home runs clearly. But I mean, he just had a better lineup. He had Murderer's Row plus Cano in those years.
Oh, 100% a better lineup.
Alex Rodriguez, Judge has had nowhere near the same caliber lineup. I mean, you're talking about
nowhere near the lineup.
Nowhere near. So
and
the RBI,
you're seeing what he could do. You're seeing what he could do now with Soto in front of him. So.
Right. I mean, the RBI numbers are just they're inflated, and it's higher. And I'm not dismissing RBIs, but it is sort of a team. He had more opportunities with more guys on base. He had Derek Jeter in the prime of his career getting on base in front of him. I mean, he had Hall of Famers in that lineup. I mean, it's. You know, Robinson Cano was one of the great young players in all of baseball for a time. He's got Mark Teixeira. He's got, like, you know, a bunch, not in 2007, obviously, but, I mean, at a time. So, I mean, I just don't think it's fair to look at the RBIs just on themselves. But I will just tell you, it's the eye test and some of the numbers and everything. I watched every single at-bat of Alex Rodriguez. I've seen him have seasons where he struggled. I've seen him have playoffs where he batted eighth. I've seen the whole thing from the highs and lows. In my mind.
And if you look at the postseason, A-Rod's got 09.
That's it.
And then right after that, they'll say, oh, the struggles continue. So
yeah.
Judge could light up October today and have three consecutive Octobers in a row, and the Yankee fans will kill him. Short memories.
No, absolutely. I love Alex Rodriguez. I'll defend Alex Rodriguez. I'm not even going to bring steroids into the conversation, which obviously are part of it, if you want to be fair. But, no, I've watched them. I've watched them both. And in my mind, Aaron Judge has been the better Yankee. And during these seasons, I mean, it's hard to say. Let's compare those seasons real quick. Since we're doing it, why not? All right, so Judge in 22. He's got 62 home runs, 131 RBIs, compared to 54, 156. So he's got 20 less RBIs or so. He's got 25 less RBIs. And he's got 8 more home runs. He's got a 1.111 OPS compared to Alex Rodriguez's 1.067. So he's got him on OPS. He's got him on slug. He's got him on base. Total bases, 376 for Alex, 391 for Judge. In almost any way you shape it, other than batting average, 314 compared to 311. So that's pretty much on par. Other than RBIs, 111 walks for Judge compared to 95 walks for Alex. Like, no matter how you look at it, Judge's 22 is better than Alex Rodriguez's 07. Other than RBIs, which is, in a way, a team stat, and that anyone can tell you. I mean, they had Hicks, Gallo. They had to trade for Harrison Bader to help their offense come the end of that season. It was not the same as that 07 Yankee team. It just wasn't. For my money, as great as Alex Rodriguez was, Judge has been better as a Yankee. Plus, playing center field, right field, he's just third base. Alex Rodriguez played a great third base, but Judge has just been the better player. Philip in Jamaica, what's up, Phil?
Hello, thank you for taking my call. Always great to talk to you. And the second straight time, I came right after Phil. I'm Phil, too. Anyway.
That's all right. Phils are okay. Yeah, I don't have any sort of fill quota or anything. You're good.
And I do want to talk about Judge, but I also want to talk about the competition the Yanks face. But I do want to make a point with Judge. I just wonder, he's great, Judge. I'm not saying he's not great, but Soto helps Judge because he gets more opportunities, and Judge helps Soto.
No doubt. No doubt. Now, listen, again, he hasn't helped him to the point of making him the best hitter in baseball because he was the best hitter in baseball before Soto came here. But there is no doubt right now the two of them are feeding off each other. There's no doubt they help each other. There's no doubt that the middle of the – if you talk – right, if Volpe is going to continue to do this, and there's no reason to think he won't, I mean, that 1-2-3, I'll put it up there with – Betts, Freeman, and Ohtani. I know it's probably better than the Yankees, but those two guys are right now the two best hitters in baseball, and if Volpe can be what he's been with the speed and getting on base, like, it's so freaking good. It's just devastating. Yeah. It's just devastating. So the two of them are massive, and I'll tell you, like, you know, when we talk about the MVP of the team, and they're both clearly the front runners for MVP of the American League, Evan talked about it, and if you look at it in two different ways, I look at it as Judge, to me, is still the MVP of the team and is the MVP of the American League over Soto because of this. Soto's been more consistent, no doubt. Soto, from day one of the season, has been there playing at a level of all-star MVP caliber the entire year. And Judge had a miserable April. But the Yankees became different. And maybe it's because both of them, but really it's because just Judge went off. The Yankees became different. The Yankees were shut out a bunch of times. The Yankee offense was sputtering. The Yankees weren't playing this brand of baseball. The Yankees were still, you know, they lost to the Orioles. They struggled a little bit. They weren't this force that they've become, much like they were in 22 when Judge was having this incredible year and carrying an otherwise subpar lineup. Judge carries the team. I know Soto's hit big home runs. I love Juan Soto. I want him to be here forever. He's incredible. Every at-bat's a battle. I think he's brought a lot of different elements to this team. I think he's brought a fight of every pitch, every at-bat. He's brought an element of consistency and an element of urgency in every pitch that the team desperately needed. But the team became a machine. The team became the best team in baseball when Judge started hitting. Judge carries them. Judge hits the home runs. Judge is the driving force. Judge is the Superman that carries everyone. Soto's just, wow, what an incredibly professional player. How impressive. Coming through in the clutch, it's amazing. Judge is the one that makes your jaw drop. And there's a difference there. There is a difference there.
Well, I want to talk about the teams that the Yankees faced. The American League, Baltimore took 2 out of 3 for the Yankees. Cleveland, you know, Yankees took three out of four, and that's my question.
Yeah.
Do you think Baltimore is a big challenge to the Yankees? And do you think the Yankees could overcome Baltimore? Because Baltimore's a damn good young team.
Yeah, they absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, Phil, the answer to both your questions is yes. The answer to both your questions is obviously yes. Are the Baltimore Orioles a legitimate issue for the New York Yankees? Are they a legitimate contender to beat the Yankees? Are they as much a team to contend with as any other in the American League? Absolutely. They are a legitimate team who have already taken 3 or 4 from the Yankees and are a major threat. They're young. They're talented. Gunnar Henderson is one of the best players in all of baseball. I mean, they've got a pitching staff when healthy that is, you know, really good. They're missing their closer, who they would make them even better, but still, you know, Cano is a very good reliever. They've got some issues, and I don't think they're as good as the Yankees. So, yeah, are they a legitimate threat to the Yankees? Yes. And then to your second question, can the Yankees overcome the Orioles? Of course. Why? Because they lost 3 out of 4. In one series, they played once this year in Baltimore, and the Yankees lost 3 out of 4? Of course they can overcome them. Of course. There's no doubt they can beat the Orioles. Absolutely. But so the Orioles can beat them. They are the two best teams in the American League right now. And certainly the division is long gone. The division's long gone. It's a two-team race. That's just, I mean, the Yankees have the best record in baseball, tied with the Phillies. So the best record in the American League, let's just say. And Baltimore is 2.5 back. And then Boston is 12.5 back. It's a 10-game gap between second and third place. And more than that, they're all under 500. Boston's 30 and 31. Tampa's the same. And then Toronto is 28 and 32. It's a two-team race in the American League East. That's it. There's two teams. The other teams aren't very good. And then, honestly, let's be fair. I mean, Houston is trying to work their way back. And if they're healthy, I would still, until they lose, would consider them a threat. And again, I'm not kidding. I hope they win that division. The Rangers just got Eovaldi back, and Seager's been killing it. And they're defending champs, so they're a threat. Seattle's playing very well and has a rotation that's as good as any in baseball. Their offense kind of stinks, but if Rodriguez ever gets it together and maybe they add some offense at the trade deadline, you could see them becoming a threat. Cleveland's 40 and 20 and has had a great year, and the middle of their order is dangerous, and maybe the top of the rotation a little bit, but ultimately I don't know how much I fear them. And Kansas City's having a nice year, but I don't think they're ready yet to really make their way into the upper echelon of the American League just yet. And Minnesota's Minnesota, who they could have a record of 150 and 12. The 12 losses would be to the Yankees. So I'm not worried about them. It's Baltimore and the Yankees. But yeah, no, of course they're a threat. They're an excellent young team who plays to their ballpark, who can pitch, who believes in themselves, who's young, athletic. There's no doubt they're a threat. But are they something the Yankees can't get past? Are you kidding me? They got swept. They won 101 games last year. They got swept in the playoffs. They haven't emerged as some sort of powerhouse. They're a nice young team. In second place. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. Continue to take your Yankee phone calls. I have no problem talking Yankees, as you know. We can mix in some other things, too. The Mets did play. They did win a game. They did get another good starting pitching performance. And the bullpen, once again, was shaky. And Jeff McNeil has not played for three consecutive games. So there are some things to get to with the Mets. The football is a conversation always. And, of course, there was a debate about Aaron Rodgers and Eli Manning that would spark debate and get, you know, someone to call me up and call me stupid for that, too.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
A high pop-up. He's going to do it at shortstop. Jeter on the outfield grass makes the catch. The Yankees win. The Yankees win. And Doc Gooden pitches a no-hitter.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
33, McMonagle here with you. You know, to mention one thing about the Mets, obviously they've won two straight games against the Washington Nationals. They got a little bit of a break. The starting pitcher gets scratched right before the game, and a rookie making his major league debut comes in. But still, Lindor's been hot. The offense is kind of awoken here. You're consistently getting pretty good starting pitching. I mean, it's not always great, and it doesn't go deep into games, but the Mets have really kind of, it's been, even Peterson comes in last night and pitches into the seventh inning and does a good job, gets into a little bit of trouble, but ultimately does a really good job. McGill has come off the injured list and done a really good job. It has its moments, but it's been pretty good. It's been a pleasant surprise. The offense has been the issue, and right now the bullpen is without question a disaster. I mean, you barely make it through both of these games. I mean, you got to sweat out everything. Obviously, even, Reed Garrett has really struggled after being one of the best relievers in baseball. He's really struggled, and even Ottavino's completely kind of fallen off. Right now there's really not a lot of guys you trust in that bullpen. But the other thing that's gone on here is now McNeil, who the manager still calls the starting second baseman of the team, has not played for three consecutive games. And I believe while Iglesias has started over him, as someone might have told me, I can't speak to who, but as someone might have reminded me, the Mets are now, what was it again, Fleeks?
3-1.
Three and one.
You just spoiled who told you. Come on.
That was the bit, Mike. 3-1 when Jeff McNeil has been benched for Iglesias. And look, you'd love to move him. And I'm still in the mindset where the Mets are probably playing this out and eventually will sell. I don't know if I have faith in this team. The bullpen's a disaster. The lineup's still too streaky. Although you look at Lindor, and amazingly enough, like, the numbers are starting to creep up to somewhere. I mean, on-base percentage of 300 is still pretty atrocious, but he's hitting 230. You know, his OPS is just at just about 700. At 698, let's just call it 700. So he's got his OPS, you know, at least in the 700s. He's hitting 232. He's been hot over the last few weeks. You know how great he is defensively. That's never an issue. And so it's starting to creep back up into respectability. And I've never doubted that the idea that eventually he'll have a Lindor-type season. But it's just, it's when he struggles and how the team fades while he struggles and how he doesn't help them in the moment. But he's starting to come around. I still have, you know, very little faith. Vientos, you know, actually defensively made a great play in this game. He's looked not as good as Beatty necessarily, but when you combine the hitting and the level of, you know, added defense, he looks better than he did last year defensively, at least. He's giving you something. Bader, who's having a pretty damn good season for Bader, 271 for Bader, and as clutch as he's been, is actually getting a lot from Harrison Bader, and he hits the two-run home run in this game. But my point is, I think there is something to Jeff McNeil being out of the lineup and this team performing better. I do. I think there's something about him. He mopes, his body language, everything about the guy. If he's not hitting, he's not happy. Now, they're not winning either, so it's not like one of those things where you could say, all he cares about is himself. They're winning, and he's still miserable because they're not winning. But it's just, he mopes, he complains, he looks, and the at-bats are so bad. And honestly, you're better off right now. As much as I would love the idea of playing him, getting him somewhat hot, and convincing someone to take him, I don't know the value he gives you. And right now, as while the season, I can call them dead all I want, they're 3.5 games out of a wild card spot. Now, 3.5 and six teams ahead of them. But, I mean, as much as I don't think they'll recover and get there, they can't think that way. And I think they're better with Iglesias. I think he's brought a little bit of just injected, and I know this sounds harsh maybe, but he's injected a little bit of anything but McNeil into the team. And right now, it's kind of what they needed. And, you know, hopefully that home run from Alonso can get him going. He hasn't been terrible, but he hasn't really gotten into that real comfortable pace that you'd like to see Alonso get into. So, I mean, right now the bullpen's so bad, the lineup's been so inconsistent, and the rotation doesn't get deep enough into the games, but you are getting pretty good starting pitching, and the lineup has its moments. But they've taken two from the Nationals and against a rookie who's making his major league debut. So it's a good two games. I like the idea that the Mets, and here's the other thing with the Mets, they've been consistent. In the offseason, they didn't treat it so much like this. There wasn't the urgency of this year. But you know what? Now that they're playing the season, if you don't play well, you don't play. I mean, the general manager went out there and made a trade. One of the first moves he's really made is the Met general manager. He trades for Hauser. You don't pitch well, you're going to the bullpen. We got better options. Beatty's not performing, you got to go. McNeil, you not hitting, you're benched. Like, they've been consistent. I like the message that at least the Mets are sending, where it's like, hey, listen, okay, we're struggling, no doubt. And we might tell you we believe in you, and we might tell you we have faith in this team, but ultimately, if you don't play well, we're not going to just continue to throw you out there. I like that message from the Mets, especially even considering I think the GM ultimately wants to be able to break this whole thing down and rebuild it in his vision. He's not messing around. He wants to win. He wants to at least be respectable. And if you don't play well, you ain't playing. And right now, Jeff McNeil deserves to be benched. So I like the message that the Mets have sent. And, you know, listen, Lopez, you don't want to be here? Bye. Like, they've been consistent with that. But we are going to play the best team we have, whether that team's good enough to win or not. We're going to play the best team we have. If you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here. We're building something here. And as much as I'll give them that, but right now it's a nice two games against Washington, but I really don't have much faith in this team. But especially with the bullpen being in shambles, because, again, you know how I am. I like to talk about strengths and weaknesses, and what was a perceived strength and an early strength of this bullpen has now become a disaster. To the point where, like, right now, Dednell Núñez might be their best reliever. And you can't trust Ottavino to close out games, and even Garrett has come back to earth and been wildly inconsistent and walking. I mean, you can't come in with a 4-run lead and walk the leadoff guy. Like, that's not, you can't do that. But at least they're sending a positive message. They've won two games. And ultimately, if you want to believe, which is obviously important, they're 3.5 games out of a playoff spot. And the National League isn't that good, but you've got a ton of teams in front of you and still a lot of issues to be fixed. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. TJ in Fairlawn. What's up, TJ?
Hey, Mac, how are we doing, my man?
I'm doing great, TJ. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Okay. I kind of wanted to talk about Luis Gil a little. Another dominant performance. He looked terrific again. 7 or 8 innings, 1 hit.
Mm-hmm.
He looked great. But there's a point that I wanted to bring up. I was talking to my friend about him recently, just talking about how great he is, kind of what he can be. And he brought up an interesting point to me. Throughout Luis Gil's career, the most innings he's pitched in a single season is 96.
Yeah.
I mean, that might not really matter in the majors. It might not really apply.
No.
But as of right now, he's up to 69 innings, and we're in a couple days into June.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to know how far you think, like, he could go, and if, like,
yeah, I mean, listen, TJ, you've tapped into the biggest question mark about him that we've all, like, you know, this has been the debate about him and what they're going to do with him. I believe it was 4 innings last year, and you're right, his arm isn't built up. Now, they've talked about having other ways to monitor arm fatigue other than just an innings limit, which is typically what it's been over the course of the history of the Yankees and really baseball, where there's been a feel of like, okay, you pitched this many innings last year, you're allowed a 40% increase this year. Like, there's been a limit on innings, and while they say they're not going to do that, because clearly he's already pitched, he pitched 4 last year, so I mean he's already well above what he pitched last year. But and thank you for the call, TJ. I just can't imagine they're going to let him go. He's not going to make 32 starts this year. I just can't imagine that. Now there's ways, there's things you could do. I don't think transitioning him into the bullpen is what you want to do. I think you want him pitching in the postseason as a starter, no doubt. So if you want to play that game, now you're talking about putting him in the bullpen, limiting his innings, and then starting a path of rebuilding him for the postseason, which I just don't like that idea. So what do you do from there? Like, there are ways to just I'm thinking what they're going to do is they're going to just skip him. Again, at the All-Star break, they can play games where you pitch him first in the rotation leading into the All-Star break, so you can give him, say, a week leading into the All-Star break without pitching, and then set up the rotation so he's the last pitcher making a start out of the All-Star break, and that's like, almost 2 weeks off the calendar without him pitching, and then you just skip him from time to time and have him throw a bullpen or whatever instead, to have him throw a simulated 3-inning game instead of putting him out there. Like, they'll probably just do that, is my guess on how they'll handle it. But you're right. He is not going to throw 190 innings. I can't imagine him doing that. I can't imagine the Yankees letting him just go. And as long as he as long as he's passing all of their tests, as long as he's getting through all the different things they're going to do to judge his fatigue. Like, I can't imagine they would still say, hey, look, everything's great. Hey, look, everything's great. Hey, look, everything's great. Make him, let him make another. Let him make another. Let him make another. Like, I doubt they'll just be like that. I doubt it very much. I think there will come a time where they go, listen, we got to back off slightly. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, what's going on this morning? How you doing, Doug?
Good, how are you, sir?
I'm all right. I'm all right. You know, I want to touch on some things with the Yankees, and one of them is exactly what you were talking about with Hill. But real quick, I just want to say I'm somebody who always gets yelled at and reminded of times when I'm wrong. So let me say with you, I remember we were talking about that with Judge, and we kept saying it was just a matter of time. The kid was even stealing bases the few times he was getting walks to get on base when he was struggling. Mm-hmm. And we kept saying, it's not about that. Just let it go. It's just a timing thing. I was actually on a clock waiting to see the moment that was going to be the one that drove him to start, like, just raking. And I kept saying, it's hell to pay whenever he wakes up. So let's say that. We were part of that crew of what the new narrative is as far as what was going on back then. And that discussion you were talking about with the debate for the QBs between Rodgers and Eli,
Tiki,
I heard that discussion too, and Tiki kind of swayed me because he said something that actually swayed the argument, because he mentioned how impactful the moments that Eli had actually were and how much you remember them, and the fact that you can't tell the story of the history of the NFL without mentioning the moments, that because of the dynasties that he brought. As a matter of fact, I think he actually beat Rodgers on the road to one of those.
He did. He went into Green Bay. He went into.
Yeah, I remember that day because I have that image with the red cheeks on the coach because it was so cold. I think there was snow coming down.
That's a different game. That he went into Lambeau and beat Brett Favre in 07.
Yeah, all right.
That was the ice cold. That was the cold game where Coughlin had the red face. In the second Super Bowl run. He went into Green Bay and beat Favre in the 15-1 defending Super Bowl champs. They threw the Hail Mary at the half and ended up beating that Packer team. Yeah, no, I understand.
So I don't want to get carried away with that because I caught for my Yankee stuff.
Yeah.
Real quick though.
Yeah, real quick.
As far as Hill, I want to say some things about Hill, Soto, and a little bit about the broadcast today. You know, Hill is actually what bodes well for Luis Hill. Is that if you look at the way he's been going through his outings,
mm-hmm.
he's actually been doing it in a very efficient pitch count. As much as he's been like a strikeout pitcher, he's been doing it with a lot of low pitch counts considering the innings that he's going through. And I think they are actually watching some few other metrics. Morgan mentioned it in the broadcast today that he did a lot of extra work in the offseason with the mindset, never mind what people thought was the projection for what was going to happen for him, expecting that he was going to get an opportunity to play. So he actually put in a lot of stuff. And that the other stuff that they're looking at might be things that help them. I'm hopeful that they'll be able to manage some kind of way that this
they're gonna have something to.
They can say for the season.
They're gonna have
and
to.
As far as Soto, a shout out to last night, Short Schwartz took over your show last night.
Yeah.
And there was a caller, I think, Bruce from Flushing, and he said something that I hadn't thought about. And it's only, not that I didn't think about it, but because of the way that Soto has been doing it and how consistently he's been doing it since he got here.
Yeah.
Do you know, the fact that he just, from day one, he brought up the fact that, you know, for all the kind of, whether you call it a trade or a free agent that comes into New York.
Yeah.
For the seamless way from day one, he's been able to just like drop in and just do everything.
No doubt.
You know, nobody talks about that at all. And mm-hmm. it's like, it's almost amazing because I started to think back to try to remember an athlete that came into the city that just seamlessly, never mind the chemistry with the team, but even the production, like they had not, you know, a drop at all.
No, I agree, Val. There's no doubt. Now, to be fair, he's great. So there's been very few who are as good as Soto to come in here. Like Alex Rodriguez, no doubt. And he struggled a little bit his first year. He still ended up having a very good year, but you're right. There was a time of getting Alex, you know, acclimated to being a Yankee. He came in and immediately that first series against Houston just absolutely took off from day one. It's very rare, but he's also, I mean, I can't think of many who are as good. He's a Hall of Famer, generational player. Alex Rodriguez is one. That's it. Mark Teixeira came here and struggled. Mark Teixeira isn't Juan Soto. Never was. Jason Giambi came in here and kind of struggled a little bit early. And maybe at the time was having incredible seasons. We kind of know why, but he wasn't. He's not Juan Soto either. Like, Juan Soto is a generational Hall of Famer, you know, on track to be a Hall of Fame player, but you're right. You're right. He has come in and from day one set this team off and played great and never had an issue and fit right in, and everything's been great from day one. But for me, I still think Judge is the MVP of the team, because as great as Soto's been, I wouldn't quibble if you told me. I really don't want to have a strong argument on it, because I'm okay with either one. But Judge is what makes them great. Judge is what makes them elite. Judge is what makes them the best team in the American League. And he did that the first half of 22 with really not a good team. And now with a good team, he's doing it again. And with the help of Juan Soto, who's been great. But to get back to the Rodgers, because I want to do it, we could do it a little bit here, and we'll take your phone calls on it the rest of the show as I got you till 5 o'clock, 888-808-1019. I heard the debate that they opened the show with because of what was said by C.J. Stroud, that he would rather have the career of Eli Manning than Aaron Rodgers. And I love Eli Manning. And a couple of points that Val just relayed that Tiki said, I agree with. Those two championships are as memorable as any in this city. And I would argue the first one is as memorable as any championship in the history of sports. To beat that undefeated Patriot team. I mean, it's Super Bowl III. It's probably bigger than Super Bowl III. It doesn't mean as much to the league, obviously. We know how much any guaranteed the game we get. I'm not trying to besmirch Super Bowl III. It's one of the great championships of all time. But I'm just saying, like, as far as upsets go, and you're talking about Brady and Belichick and an undefeated team and the first one since the Dolphins, and they were about to become the greatest dynasty ever, and the two of them would immediately be thrown into the greatest quarterback coach of all time. Like, to win that game, beat that team a team that had to go on the road and pulled off these miraculous victories, and, you know, the year before you weren't sure about the coach, you weren't sure about Eli Manning, and to suddenly have that season go that way and win that Super Bowl, it's as memorable, plus the catch, you know, the Tyree catch, all of it. It's as memorable a Super Bowl and championship as there is in professional sports. And the Rodgers championship is kind of, you know, they got hot, same thing. It wasn't their best team. It wasn't their best regular season team, but they got hot at the right time, and they did beat the Pittsburgh Steelers and two-time champion Ben Roethlisberger. So, I mean, it's a good championship, but it's relatively forgettable. So I understand at that point, and I understand that he's got two and Rodgers has got one. But if I'm looking at it, and the question is, which career would I rather have? I don't think it's close. And I love Eli Manning. Love him. Love him. My favorite Giant of all time. How could he not be? I love Eli Manning. He was incredible. He's a Hall of Famer. He's great. He's an all-time Giant. And I think there is something to be said. He played for one team his whole career. I think that's moving to the Jets hurts Rodgers a little bit. If my mind, I would rather be with one team my whole career. But Aaron Rodgers has four MVPs. Aaron Rodgers is one of the handful of greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. Like, no joke. Sunday to Sunday, week to week, consistency to consistency. Evan brought it up. How many times did Eli take the Giants to the playoffs? A handful of times. And besides the two Super Bowl runs, he didn't win playoff games. It's not even about play. Like, every year Rodgers takes them to the playoffs. If Rodgers starts, you're winning. You're going to the postseason. You're winning 10 games because he's that good. He's won four MVPs. He's one of the greats of all time. Now, if he didn't have the championship, if the ring eluded him, if he were Dan Marino, I could understand it, because to have a career and never taste the championship and never have that moment and never be able to say world champion next to my name, unacceptable, unacceptable. I would take Eli Manning's career over Dan Marino's, even though Dan Marino was wildly better and one of the greats to ever play the game, because he has that mark next to him. It's a scarlet letter, practically. No championship. I wouldn't want that. And while Eli Manning has two and Rodgers has one, and we know how hard championships are to win, so I don't dismiss the idea that two is somewhat significantly more than one. He does have the championship. He's one of the greatest players of all time. If I could look back on my career, would I rather say I won two championships, but you know I'm a pretty damn good quarterback? Or would I rather look back and say I won one championship, I'm a world champion, but I'm one of the top five, six quarterbacks to ever play the game? I won four MVPs. I don't think it's that close. Aaron Rodgers' career is superior to Eli Manning's career. And that's okay to say. Eli Manning had great moments and we'll love him forever. And now he can't buy it, you know, he can't spend money in New York while I don't know how they feel about him in Green Bay for Aaron Rodgers. So it's he'll have a place to come back. He'll be beloved. He's not as mercurial or you know, different thinking or as, you know, much of a lightning rod and all of that, where his post-life is going to be in a different element than what maybe Rodgers' post-career will be. Post-life, post-career. But there's no doubt who I'd rather be able to look back and say what kind of football player I was. Eli Manning never came close to an MVP. Rodgers has won four. I don't even understand. I really don't. And that, it's fine. And but I'm not getting on. You know, C.J. Stroud's entitled to his opinion. Nor do I care his opinion. Whatever career he wants. He wants to win championships. I think sometimes you get pressured into saying, well, he won two. I'd rather have that one. Like, I don't know. Whatever. But, I mean, not that I want to just piggyback on their conversation, but I found it interesting because I know how Eli Manning, we joke a lot behind the scenes. I know Paul Rosenberg yesterday, although he has no idea what a single is when it comes to the music industry, we've always joked that if you don't have calls, Eli Manning, is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer? The phones will ring up. It's one of those topics. But sometimes Eli Manning gets thrusted into the great runs. Eli Manning gets thrusted into the championships and the beating the undefeated Patriots. And I love him, and he had an amazing career. He was there. He never got hurt. He played every single game. All of that's incredible. He made a ton of money, but, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is far, far superior to the player, and he does have a championship. It's not like if he didn't have one, he would be different. He does. And whether it's as memorable as Eli's or as great as Eli's or, he, you know, Eli has one more, I mean, it's like even like if his brother never won that last Super Bowl, would you rather be Peyton Manning or Eli Manning? You'd rather be Eli because he won maybe one more Super Bowl when Peyton Manning was like the greatest to ever do it. Like, I mean, I think greatness is like kind of being underrated here. Eli had his moments and was great when he needed to be great, and they won two championships, the greatest, arguably two of the greatest the city's ever seen, but I think we're undervaluing greatness here because Eli was damn good and Eli's going to get into the Hall of Fame. Aaron Rodgers is great. Aaron Rodgers is one of the handful of greatest to ever play. He is on another level. And as long as you have a championship to go along with it, at least at one point you can say, I was a world champion. Being on that next elite level, where I forget who talked about it. We talk about like maybe the Hall of Fame should have like a special place for the great players, and then you kind of like rotate in and out. I forget when we had that conversation. I think Craig had it, but like Aaron Rodgers is in the penthouse of the Hall of Fame. He's a first ballot Hall of Fame. Put him at the top of the toppy tip top. And as long as you can say you're a champion and belong in that room, how could you rather have a different career? I just don't see it.